For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to those of you who came in for the 9:30 sitting. We are doing a full-day meditation session or retreat today, but welcome. We're happy you're here to join us. Some people are staying for half a day. Some people are staying for the full day. But essentially, it's a time for us, with our practice, with our zazen, to try and settle and to try and go a little deeper with the experience of our zazen. We know as we're moving about our life in this very hectic world we live in, with a lot of outside challenges and interior challenges, oftentimes it can be difficult when we sit on the cushion to get an experience of settling, to have an experience of stillness. It's very nice when we do the longer sittings, because whether we feel we can do that or not, if we just trust the zazen, it will do that for us. And we experience that when we do the longer sittings. Meaning, there's an awareness that happens when we do zazen, but we don't do anything. We just do zazen. And the zazen brings us to that settled place on its own, if we just have faith in it, that it will. I wanted to look at some of the writings of a few Zen masters that point to that idea of a settled mind, or point to going beyond mind, or point to looking at big mind, and kind of bring up the question, well, what is that? What are they talking about? Because since we're doing longer sitting today, it's something that we could sit with. So the first master I wanted to look at, his name was Huang Bo. And he was a Zen master who lived in China during the Tang Dynasty. There's very little known about him, but everybody pretty much agrees that he died in 850 CE. No one really knows when he was born. No one really knows exactly where he was from. But they do know also he was a student of Bai Zhang, which we know from the great Zen story, Bai Zhang's Fox. And he was also the teacher of Linji, who was the founder of the Rinzai sect of Soto Zen. So these are all just different lineages within our Soto Zen practice. Anyway, he wrote a text, a teaching text called On the Transmission of Mind. So first, in Zen practice, mind, the word mind is batted around a lot. And again, I think in some ways it's a matter of translation, where in Asian languages sometimes different concepts of mind and heart would actually be represented by different characters or different words in the language. And oftentimes, though, in English, they get translated as just mind, as just heart. Just like love, we know there's many kinds of love, but in English we tend to just say love for all of the kinds of love that we can experience. So often in our Zen practice, mind is either expressed as kind of a small M, mind, which there's a Tibetan teacher who I feel describes this mind that we all have, just mind, as a formless continuum that functions to perceive and understand objects. Because the mind is formless or non-physical by nature, it is not obstructed by physical objects. So we all know this is the eye that's thinking all the time. So there's that mind that's a small m. Then there's big mind, or the ultimate, or the universal. Usually zazen points to that mind. And sometimes people, teachers, will say, we go beyond mind. We go beyond mind to the ultimate. So there's an expression of a mind that somehow is quite expansive and larger and points to our intrinsic nature that Zazen helps us discover. And then there's the idea of thought. And of course, it's thought meaning, you know, I have to cook lunch. I have to go to work now. I have a list of things I need to do. I like or dislike this or that. And we're all very familiar with that. The founder of the Zen lineage, the Zen practice, Bodhidharma, said about Zazen and Zen practice in general that it's a special transmission outside of the scriptures. It doesn't have dependency on words or letters. It points directly to the human mind, seeing into one's nature and attaining Buddhahood. So when we say it points directly to the human mind, what is the human mind? What's the role in pointing directly to this human mind so that we could see one's nature and attain Buddhahood? This is an open-ended question. When we sit Zazen, all of us are trying to maybe answer this for ourselves, or if not answer it for ourselves, experience it for ourselves. Because we're trying to go beyond words and letters. We're trying to go beyond conceptual thought. But we often need to use these tools to understand that we're trying to experience something that goes beyond these conceptual thoughts. Sometimes it could feel like a riddle. Now, directly from Huangbo, and this is on the handout I gave you. Ordinary people all indulge in conceptual thought based on environmental phenomenon. Hence, they feel desire and hatred. To eliminate environmental phenomena, just put an end to your conceptual thinking. When this ceases, environmental phenomena are void. And when these are void, thought ceases. Ordinary people all indulge in conceptual thought based on environmental phenomenon. So I feel pretty secure in saying that most of us in this room are ordinary people. Except maybe one or two. But I'm not sure yet. And we all indulge in conceptual thought. So again, conceptual thought, it's an idea of something. So we engage in the mind drifting around and having ideas about what our experience actually is. He's saying that this is based on environmental phenomenon. So he's saying that environmental phenomenon is this room. It's us sitting next to each other. And he's saying our conceptual thought is based on the fact that we are in this environment. We see a structure to it. There's something underneath our feet. There's something above our head. Right now, there's a wooden floor. Sometimes there's grass. Sometimes there's sky. We have ceiling fans. So all of our ideas popping around in our head is basically being fed by the fact that there's environmental phenomenon manifesting itself around us. Because of that, human beings feel desire or hatred. Those are very strong words. If we said it in a more easier way, we either like or dislike everything that's happening around us in some fashion. You know, we're all adults, so we're used to not thinking about every single thing we like or dislike. But if you're around children at all, you know, they're always talking, I don't like this, I like this, I don't like this, I want this, you know. So we're, right? We're actually the same. We just kind of are used to ignoring a lot of that tape that's going on in us because we know half the time we can't really do much about it. But the idea is that we're either pushing against something that we dislike, we're leaning into something that we really enjoy, or we're kind of indifferent. We're like, yeah, well, I don't really like it, I don't really love it, but, you know, I guess it's okay. Now, Huangbo is saying to eliminate this environmental phenomenon that we perceive that is manifesting around us, we have to put an end to conceptual thinking. But didn't he just say that conceptual thought is based on environmental phenomena? Wait a minute. He's saying when this ceases, environmental phenomena are void. And when these are void, thought ceases. So we see this circular reasoning about emptiness. Emptiness is a teaching in Buddhist philosophy that says there really is nothing to attach to. There is no identity to get attached to. There's nothing to grab onto. There is nothing that's permanent. That everything is in a constant state of flux. And one of the reasons everything's in a constant state of flux is that really we're surrounded by nothing, even though we can perceive something. This something is inherently empty. So if the mind could still and we could let go of ideas about what should be happening in our outside world, Huang Bo is proposing that this environmental phenomenon we're experiencing will cease in some fashion. Now we'll go back to his words. But if you try to eliminate environment without first putting a stop to conceptual thought, you will not succeed, but merely increase its power to disturb you. I feel what he's saying there goes back to the emptiness teachings, that if you try to accept or eliminate the environment that you're experiencing around you, you're actually going to make things very difficult. I feel he's saying that if you put a lot of effort into perceiving the idea of emptiness or feeling that you could understand the idea of emptiness in some fashion, if you just put some effort into the idea of it, you're actually making it more difficult to understand emptiness. Thus, all things are naught but mind. Now he's talking about mind with a capital M. Thus, all things are naught but mind. The universal, maybe. The ultimate. And then he says intangible mind. So obviously we can't grab onto it at all. So if everything is naught but mind, so what can you hope to attain? Therefore, the Buddha said, I truly obtain nothing from enlightenment. There is just a mysterious, tacit understanding and no more. So tacit meaning something that doesn't need to be explained. So letting go of... We already said that. Now I want to look at Dogen, who's the founder of our lineage in Japan. So he brought the Zen lineage from China to Japan in the mid-1200s. In one of Dogen's fascicles on sitting Zazen, he says, think of not thinking. Not thinking. What kind of thinking is that? It's beyond thinking. Sometimes we encapsulate these three sentiments as thinking, not thinking, and non-thinking. Thinking, not thinking, non-thinking. So the non-thinking is having the experience beyond conceptual thought, beyond environmental phenomenon, a big mind. Now back to Huang Bo. If an ordinary man, when he is about to die, could only see the five elements of consciousness as void, the four physical elements as not constituting an I, the real mind as formless and neither coming nor going, his nature as something neither commencing at his birth nor perishing at his death, but as whole and motionless in its very depths, his mind and environmental objects as one, If he could really accomplish this, he would receive enlightenment in a flash. So when he says, if an ordinary man, an ordinary person, could only see the five elements of consciousness as void, he's talking about the five skandhas or aggregates. Matter, sensations, perceptions, formations. We chant these in the Heart of Perfect Wisdom Sutra. Awareness. When he speaks of the four elements, he's talking about the elements that are believed to constitute our physical body, which is earth, air, fire, and water. Meaning earth is the air that you breathe in your lungs. Earth is the skin and flesh. Air is the what you breathe. It's the respiratory, but it's also like having gas and, you know, like all of these. Water is not only the fact that we're made of water, but it's mucous membranes. These four elements constitute this physical form. So he's saying if you could go beyond the idea of all of that, you could receive a flash of enlightenment. If these ordinary persons, if they should behold the glorious sight of all the Buddhas coming to welcome them, surrounded by every kind of gorgeous manifestation, they would feel no desire to approach them. If they should behold all sorts of horrific forms surrounding them, they would experience no terror. They would just be themselves, oblivious of conceptual thought and one with the absolute or ultimate. They would have attained the state of unconditional being. This, then, is the fundamental principle. So we're using these conceptual thoughts to point to an experience. Our Zazen will offer us. Now I want to go to another master, Keizan, and this is from something Douglas handed us a few weeks ago that he wrote about practicing Zazen. And I feel he's speaking of the same thing, the same idea of this experience of going beyond, but he's using a little bit of different language, and sometimes it can be helpful for different people to hear it in different ways. Although we speak of realization, this realization does not hold itself as being realization. This is practice of the supreme samadhi, or meditative state, which is knowing of unborn, unobstructed, and spontaneously arising awareness. It is the door of luminosity which opens out onto the realization of those who come thus, born through the practice of great ease. This goes beyond the patterns of holy and profane, goes beyond confusion and wisdom. This is the realization of unsurpassed enlightenment as our own nature. So I'm hitting the same teaching again and again, because when we do longer sitting, sometimes it could help to sit with this idea, to go beyond this idea. I often joke that when we do longer sittings, my first period of Zazen, I call my throwaway period. Since I know I'm going to do a day-long, multiple periods of sitting, when I sit down, I don't focus on my breath. I just sit down and let my mind go crazy. Now I'm aware of it. I'm aware my mind is going crazy. I'm doing my Zazen. But I don't try to bring focus concentration to it at all. I just sit there and go, oh, there we go. Okay, boom, boom, boom. It's gone. Oh, look at it. Oh, that's really amazing. Oh, okay. And in some ways, there's a joy in that. But you know what happens? And I let this happen because I know what's going to happen. My mind is going to settle on its own. My body's going to settle on its own. Now, maybe if I'm only sitting for 20 minutes, I might want to do a more focused concentration on my breath to bring myself to the present. When the mind is focused on a single thing, it tends to still. But I know I'm going to be doing more than one period, so that first one, I just let Zazen work Zazen. I just let it do what it's going to do. And it never fails. It never fails. Shunryu Suzuki, who is the founder of our lineage, came here in 1959, settled in California in San Francisco. He established the San Francisco Zen Center, of which we are a sister temple of. Has a book called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, and one of the chapters is called Beyond Consciousness. So what he says is we should establish our practice where there is no practice in enlightenment. As long as we practice Zazen in the area where there is practice and enlightenment, there is no chance to make perfect peace ourselves. Our true nature is beyond our conscious experience. It is only in our consciousness that we find practice and enlightenment, or good and bad. But whatever we have experience of, our true nature or not, what exists there beyond consciousness actually exists. So, Shunryu Suzuki is saying the same thing as the other two masters. As long as we have ideas, as long as we have concepts of what Zazen should or shouldn't be, as long as we're attaching a like or dislike to the experience, or even some kind of thought as to what's good or bad about it, we're limiting the experience that the Zazen will offer us. And we need to relax into the awareness that's always there. And I think we'll have a few moments for some comments, but I'll stop there and thank you very much for indulging me. And we'll see if anything comes up for anybody.
His mind and environmental objects as one. If you could really accomplish this, you would receive enlightenment in a flash. What came to my mind hearing that is there's an album that came out recently from an artist named Mount Fury called Crow Looked at Me. And he's a songwriter and he's been a prolific one for many years. And the record is about is a really direct expression of grief at losing his wife, who got cancer and died when she was in her mid late 30s. Like, you know, and this happened very recently. So they were very happily married and in love, and she got cancer, and they had like a year left to be together. And then he just wrote this record like, immediately afterward. It's like a way for him to grieve. And one of the tracks on the record, he says, you know, you and I went to, I think he said that you and I went to a temple or something like that and talked about the concept of enlightenment or the concept of emptiness and enjoyed that on a philosophical level. But now I'm like taking out the garbage from the bathroom that you were last in, you know, for the first time since you died. And death is real. Like, something really happened here, mm-hmm. you know? So I don't really have like an answer to that, but I guess that's what popped into my head, that like, I think it's easy to be intoxicated by this, like, you know, the, everything's happening, you know, there's no, it's all the ultimate reality, man, you know, kind of thing. But, you know, he really says that, like, death is real, you know, you can hear it in his voice, you know, that's a distinct experience that he's having to deal with. And, I guess, I think it's important for us maybe to, you know, I want to keep that in mind as I'm practicing too, and I'm too leaning into this emptiness thing and ignoring that kind of experience. Yeah.
I agree. Like when I read that too, whenever I read something like that, I can't imagine feeling that way about life and death. And I think in the Buddha's enlightenment, if the Buddha really experienced this, which by all accounts he did and he does, I can't imagine what that would feel like. I just can't. And I know from my own practice, I'm very attached to even the environmental phenomenon that I experience every day. So sometimes the idea of experiencing real big mind or emptiness, it kind of weirds me out, because I found from my sitting that I am very attached to looking around the room and seeing everybody as individuals and having the wood underneath my feet, and that there's parts of me that really like it. There's times where I've really hated it, but I think on the whole, because I'm used to it, I really like it a lot. So if you believe in rebirth and all that, it creates another dilemma, right? But yeah, I agree with you. Birth and death are so real to us. But I have faith that it's part of our practice for a reason. But that's me having faith, and that's why I say I have faith. Because I have no proof that it's part of our practice for a reason. But I completely agree with you on that. Thank you for your comment. Asian.
Thank you for a wonderful talk. You're reminding me of something about reality. Two things. But one is what we think we are, you know, we want so badly for things to be predictable. And, you know, people talk about, you know, we want to be right sometimes more than we want to be happy. So even if we're miserable, at least, you know, we're holding on to that somehow. And there have been lots of different studies that, among which are, you know, our brains are organizing things all the time. So what's happening is beyond really what we can perceive, because our brains are constantly organizing it. We have, you know, each of us blind spots in our eyes, but our brains are filling in the information. There are studies that, you know, show people videos and something that they're not expecting to see, you know, happens in the video and they don't even see it. And so there's lots of things like that give us little hints into reality, which is that reality is happening on levels that we are not able to perceive. And sometimes when we are able to sit down and just slow down enough, we can perceive a little bit more. And sort of the opposite of the first thing that Wango is saying, you know, when we can sit down, we can perceive a little bit more. And that can give us some faith that, you know, this thing that I now perceive that I didn't perceive before, maybe there's even more than that. Which is what I wanted to summarize up with the other thing. You know, we chant the song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi, and there's a part that talks about, you know, now there are sudden and gradual in which teachings and approaches arise. When teachings and approaches are distinguished, each has its standard. Whether teachings and approaches are mastered or not, reality constantly flows. I just love that reminder that, you know, whether we hold on to it, whether we let go of it, whether we're, you know, doing it right, reality is constantly flowing. And there'll be more of it, you know, coming up any minute. So, or as Dogen says, you know, you see and understand only what your eye of practice can reach. You see and understand only what your eye of practice can reach. It's from Gendo Koan. So we sit maybe to help our practice eye.